Earth and Sky.
We can no longer manage our water like it's the 20th century or, frankly, the 19th century. It's the 21st century. We have to rethink the way we manage water. We have to address new issues like climate change. We have to solve old issues like the failure to meet basic human needs for water.
You're listening to global water expert Peter Glick of the Pacific Institute, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Glick spoke with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar at a science meeting about the global water crisis and what can be done about it.
Dr. Glick, welcome to Earth and Sky.
I'm very happy to be here.
You warned people recently that the world faces a serious water crisis. What's happening?
Well, we have very many challenges around fresh water, and they vary from place to place around the globe. There are more than a billion people worldwide that don't have access to safe drinking water, something most of us in the richer countries take completely for granted. And there are 2.5 billion people, probably 40% of the world's population, that doesn't have access to adequate sanitation services. And that leads to water-related diseases. It leads to many, many deaths of mostly small children. And it's a crisis because it's bad, but it's preventable. It's inexcusable that we have not met these basic human needs.
Do you think water is a human right?
I do think water is a human right. I think it doesn't get much more fundamental and basic than safe, clean water. In most of the world, we pay for our water services, and I think that's perfectly appropriate. But in many parts of the world where people are very poor and don't have access to safe water, I think it's the responsibility of governments to provide safe water as a human right.
People, where are some areas that really need to be looked at right away?
Of course, we worry the most about places like sub-Saharan Africa, some of the parts of Southern Asia, the poorest parts of the planet where the largest populations without access to safe water and sanitation exist. But we also worry about places where extreme events around water, serious droughts, serious floods occur. Bangladesh is very vulnerable to flooding, as we know. Parts of the United States are periodically in drought. So there are a series of issues and areas that are of worry to people who think about water.
You've said that the climate change will shrink access to clean water for some. Are we seeing the effects of climate change on water supplies now?
Well, with all of the other things we have to worry about with water resources, and there are many of them, we now have to worry about global climate change. And for those of us who can remember what we learned about the hydrologic cycle in elementary school, evaporation and the formation of clouds and condensation and precipitation and runoff, that's the hydrologic cycle. That determines how much water we get and where we get it. But that's also the climate cycle. And as we change the climate, which we're doing, we will fundamentally change how much water we have, where we get it, when we get it, and the quality of water. Unfortunately, the climate models are suggesting that the wet parts are going to get wetter and the dry parts are going to get drier, and that's, of course, the worst of all possible worlds. Really, we're faced with three options, I think, as a society. We have to mitigate, that is, reduce greenhouse gas emissions so that the severity of climate change is reduced. We have to adapt, because some climate changes are unavoidable no matter what we do, or we have to suffer. The big question facing us is, what's the proportion of each of those three things, mitigation, adaptation, and suffering, are we going to experience? And I think the more we do early, the less suffering we'll have to do later.
I wanted your thoughts on some recent announcements by the United Nations on predictions that because of climate change, over half of the people on Earth could face a shortage of clean water by 2080. And this is a very different situation than what's happening right now.
Well, even without climate change, as populations grow, we see regions of the planet where more and more people are faced with water scarcity, where there just is no longer enough water per person to do the things we want to do, in particular, to grow food. 80% of the water that we as humans use on the planet goes to grow food. And as populations grow, we have to meet those food needs of those new people. That's going to require more land, it's going to require more water, or it's going to require better agricultural systems.
You've written about how disputes over water can lead to violence. How would you advise people to work some of these problems out?
There's a very long history of conflicts over water resources, going back 5,000 years. We actually maintain on one of our websites at worldwater.org a chronology of water-related conflicts. We fight over water. We fight with water. We see examples where countries have targeted water systems during conflicts. And increasingly, we're seeing disputes over water scarcity. Simply not having enough water to do everything that everyone wants leads to political conflict and sometimes violent conflict over those water resources. The conflict in Darfur is about many things, but it has a water component to it. The conflicts between some of the ethnic groups and the tribes in Somalia and Ethiopia and Kenya and other parts of Africa have historical roots, but they also have water roots. We have to get better at water diplomacy, if you will.
How secure would you say that water supplies are here in the United States?
As a nation, we're relatively well endowed with water, but the problem is that regionally, we see growing scarcity. We see growing conflicts over water. We see growing disputes between states over water that's shared by states. For example, between Alabama, Georgia, and Florida over the Apalachicola-Chattahoochee-Flint River system. We see declining groundwater levels in many parts of the country where we're overpumping groundwater faster than nature naturally recharges it, and that's not sustainable. And there's a question about how vulnerable our built water infrastructure is to terrorism, for example. I think in the last few years there's been a growing awareness and concern about terrorism, and I think we've made improvements in reducing those risks. But I think we still have vulnerable water systems for political reasons, for economic reasons, for social reasons. And the truth is we could do much better as a nation in managing our water for the long term.
You've recently written about the water demands of agriculture here and strategies to grow more food with less water. Tell us more about that.
Well, agriculture is a key to all of this, in part because we have to grow enough food to feed the world's population. We have to ask, how can we grow more food with less water? And that leads to what I think is a key to all of these issues, and that is water use efficiency, doing more with the water we already have.
You've been listening to Peter Glick, co-founder and president of the Pacific Institute for Studies in Development, Environment, and Security in California. He spoke with EarthSky's Jorge Salazar at a meeting in late 2008 of the American Geophysical Union. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird for EarthSky's Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.